Off the Ball Rugby.
It hasn't worked out well for Ireland, particularly, who are ultimately the paymasters. But then at the same time, Ireland weren't paying James Lowe's salary. Leinster were. He wasn't on a national contract.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening, you're very welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. And coming up from 7:30, we're going to have Gerry Kerr in studio. He is the Loosehead prop who has just finished up with Leinster. He helped them win the URC last Friday night in the final against the Bulls. 12 months ago, he was working a full-time job for Vodafone. He was playing club rugby on the side, and now he's a fully-fledged professional rugby player. So he's off to Connacht this summer to join up with Stuart Lancaster's side in the West, and he's popping in for a chat before he goes on holidays for pre-season. So that's coming your way from 7:30. Between 8 and 9, as always, on a Thursday night, it is Richie Hogan talking all things hurling. And then between 9 and 10 is the football show with Dion Fanning with us to talk about the World Cup. We'll have that live football kicking off at 9 o'clock tonight as well. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Eve Conway will be bringing us the News Round very shortly. Hello, Eve.
Hiya, how are you?
Very well. Ben Symes is here as well. Evening, Ben.
Oh.
And Dion Fanning is in early for the News Round. Dion, what's happening?
How's it going, Owen?
Very well, actually.
Yeah.
Very well, because 2 weeks ago we were sitting here with spades of FOMO on our plate, watching the Mexicans kick off our World Cup group, the group that was supposed to be the Republic of Ireland's World Cup group, and we had to watch Czechia trudge through that through the last 2 weeks while they were having a great time. We were watching the Scottish fans doing what the Irish fans were doing over the last 2 weeks. And finally, last night, we got one moment of respite where they just had sobering moments. Where
that's what you were waiting for.
That's what I was waiting for.
You're like, everyone's having too much fun.
Too much fun. Where the Czechs have been told to go home. The Scots have been told to get a bit of fresh air. We might let you back in. Go for a walk around the block. Have a strong cup of coffee. There's a Centro over there. We might let you back in on your best behaviour if that guy isn't looking in your direction.
You're like the person who's waiting at a party for one thing to go wrong so you can send everyone home.
That's it. I want this whole thing to be
over.
Everyone out.
Someone breaks a glass. Everyone out.
Particularly you, Scotland. Desperately want you to go. What was interesting about Scotland last night is that, and maybe even into today, is that the discourse around Scotland is exactly what we would have been having in terms of a conversation around the Republic of Ireland now, or at some stage in this tournament had we qualified. This whole thing about, are we good enough?
Yeah,
are we better than what we've shown against Team A, you know, top tier nation in the world? How are we not producing enough technical footballers? That is exactly where Scotland find themselves today. Look, in all seriousness, I'm very, very jealous that they get to enjoy or endure this conversation today and they still have a chance of making the knockouts. But it's a very Irish tale, the one of fans showing up, having a great time, and at the end of it all, just having the sobering realisation that your players maybe aren't as good as Brazil's.
Yeah, well, myself and Ben were, you know, talking about that on the way in, and it is that conversation. I would say that is, I wouldn't like to kind of claim this, like we have a terrible narcissistic gift of claiming everything as an Irish, characteristic, when this is pure Scotland. Like this, like everybody, you know, everybody looking at that match last night had this sense of, you know, this could, like, maybe Scotland will do it, maybe they'll do something, or is it going to be just one of those, like, pure Scottish nights of football? And, like, even from the commentator early on, I really felt when he started saying, he said, just 1 point. Just 1 point, he said. They might as well say, I just want to live on Mars. Like, you know, like it was just, it was so far, it seemed so achievable, but it was so far away as well.
You were obviously watching it on ITV or BBC?
BBC.
BBC. I was watching it on RTE, and there was a sense in the first 4 to 6 minutes before the Vinicius goal, basically, that Scotland had done very well. And they just kind of strung a few passes together, and that was it. And it's like, is this where we're stretching to here to actually commend Scotland on a good performance? But you say it's a real Scottish thing. What are the defining characteristics of Scotland navel gazing compared
to... Well, no, I don't mean navel gazing. I think the analysis is definitely very similar, and I'm sure we'll talk about it later as well, but I think just that sense that this could go, you know, this could go any way, but really it's probably going to go one way. And that, you know, that is the Scottish experience. You know, the line, I'm sure I've used it so many times, but I use it because it's still so good. The Scottish commentator before Scotland-Italy game in 2007 Euro qualifier, and he said, this is a moment of great excitement tempered by enormous anxiety. And that's like, those two poles are what Scotland is always dealing with. And they're dealing with them in extremes. And you see them in the extremes in the sense that what the supporters bring to this tournament is kind of part of it too. Like, you know, I felt all the time watching them, like, this is going to end one day. You know, this is like, oh, this you're marching off to Fenway Park now, but, you know, give it time, and the like, misery is only around the corner. And that is, and, you know, that sense of trying to get out of a group for the first time, all these things that are, you know, the Scottish kind of Scottish curse, if you like. And then I do, and again, I think we might get into this more, but like, they did start quite well. It was kind of interesting, you know, stuff that happened in that game in terms of possession. I thought Scotland, they've played in such a rigid way all through the tournament. And I thought it was interesting. There were two, like, James McFadden was a co-commentator on BBC, and again, his commentary at the moment when who was robbed for the first goal, McKenna?
It was McKenna for the first one.
Yeah, when McKenna was robbed, his co-commentary just says, "Oh God," like, that's all he heard. "Oh God," and you know, we know what happened then. But he did point in second or later on, he did say, like, when Scotland had a shot, he was like, we're not shooting enough. And like, shooting, and like, Turkey are the perfect example of why people don't want teams, coaches don't want teams shooting, taking long shots, because I don't know what their stats are, ridiculous in this competition. They've taken more long shots than anyone, zero goals. But there is something to be said for taking a little bit. Scotland are so controlled in everything they do, and there was no freedom in anything they did. And they're kind of paying the price for it. So they've scored one goal themselves, and it's kind of dismal. But it is, and so there are similarities with the Ireland experience, but I do think there are certain aspects of it that it is a pure Scotland experience.
And yet I would chop off my right arm to have experienced what Scotland experienced over the last 2 weeks. So yeah, going big on this today. Let's have a listen to some of what Steve Clarke has been saying throughout this tournament. I think before we play the post-Brazil audio, let's first remind ourselves of what he was like after Morocco.
Steve, given the timing of that first goal and coming back so much into it, being so tantalisingly close to a point, how do you sum that up?
Definitely going to sum up right now. I just want to go inside and speak to my players.
They're still debating in our studio about the penalty incident with Scott McTominay. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it or if you've had a chance to speak to Scott about it.
I haven't seen anything yet. I don't know why they do these interviews.
Do you feel a frustrating night? Do you feel a frustrating night?
Proud of the players. I thought they were fantastic.
And then here is Steve Clarke in the aftermath of the Brazil game.
And how? What's your sort of initial thoughts on the 90 minutes as a whole?
We made it difficult for ourselves. That's it.
Up against top quality opposition like that, I suppose the frustration is they didn't have to work too hard for their goals.
We gave them the goals, we gave them the game they wanted. Disappointing.
Bit of a waiting game now. How do you look at what's to come?
I was waiting, I didn't even think about that. Sorry, I don't even think about that.
No worries, Steve, thank you.
Pretty dejected Steve Clarke at the end of all of this. He is somebody who's come under fire quite a lot since yesterday. Like, is the structure that you referred to there, is that something that we need to criticise Steve Clarke for? Is that something that he's, you know, liable for at this stage? Or can he just wash his hands of this whole thing and say, listen, the players just aren't at the same level as those in gold last night?
Well, they're not the same level as Brazil, but that's not really, you know, Scotland would still be in a huge with a huge chance if they scored more goals against Haiti. Like, that's the reality of it. Like, that's not, and let in one or two fewer goals last night too. But like, that was yesterday wasn't the game where they put themselves into trouble. Now they're in a tough group, and it's not, you know, there are easier groups in the World Cup, but he's obviously responsible for he's their coach. He's responsible for that. I kind of found that interview, like, I saw that before I watched that, I saw so much kind of build up to it, like, you know, people talking about, you know, just seeing these glimpses on social media of, you know, this ill-mannered interview. And then I saw it and I just thought, like, give the guy a break. Like, it's you know, he's the manager. I understand that people have to do these post-match interviews, and we saw it ourselves over the years in Ireland with managers, with Tony O'Donoghue, not making it easy. And it's uncomfortable for whoever's asking the questions. But like, this is a pretty humiliating performance for Scotland in a World Cup, in a format where, you know, even as I said, they're in a hard group. They're thinking, this is a real chance we have to get out of it. And he's looking and it's slipping away. And, you know, he did go on later that last night to say, we're not, you know, I think we're going home. Like,
his mood actually got worse from there.
That was him. That was him, Brighton. That was him as the Kevin Keegan style figure before he got really...
Yeah, we will actually hear that clip during your news round here, Eve, I believe, because we're going to get more from Steve Clark. But you are going to start this evening with what's actually to come in around an hour and 45.
Yes, so it's the final match day for Group E in the World Cup tonight. Germany have already secured automatic qualification to the round of 32 and are guaranteed to top their group with two wins. They play Ecuador and New Jersey, who need a win to secure a path to the knockout stage, while Ivory Coast only need a draw against Curaçao to secure second place in the group, but Curaçao can advance with a win, and both games there kick off at 9. And then Groups D and F will also wrap up overnight, with the first of those games getting underway at midnight. Japan and Sweden will look to advance to the last 32, while the Netherlands meet already eliminated Tunisia. Then at 3 a.m, the USA, who have already qualified for the knockout stages, face Turkey, who are already out of the tournament. And at the same time, Paraguay and Australia will each try and secure a second place in that group.
I sometimes try and Google what the permutations are, the potential eventualities, and then I realise Ben is sitting here in studio. He's got a better idea than
our
anybody.
World Cup supercomputer.
Yeah, exactly. Explain to us, Ben, what do certain teams want to happen tonight?
Well, first things first, the boys, Ecuador, the not pretty horses, need to win against Germany or they're out. Curaçao need to win against Cote d'Ivoire or they're out. Cote d'Ivoire need to draw against Curaçao and they're probably true in second place unless Ecuador beat Germany. So that group is fairly straightforward.
But in terms of opponents for the next round?
Oh, and you've caught me on the hop here.
This is the thing, like, it's finishing second, finishing third, and in some cases finishing first, so present weird paths.
These groups are your standard. If you come second or third, if you come second, you're going to be facing a second in another group. If you come third, you're going to be facing a first in another group.
Okay.
It's when you get a bit later down the line, like Algeria's group, Austria's group, I think we might spoke about during the week, you're actually better off coming third than coming second.
Okay, so tonight isn't as far
tonight as tonight isn't as bad as that. These teams are actually just fighting to get through full stop.
Okay.
Like, Cote d'Ivoire are basically guaranteed to be true. The other group is a bit confusing. The Netherlands Morocco group. The Netherlands Morocco group line up with Scotland group. So whoever comes top of the Netherlands group, likely to be the Netherlands, will face Morocco. Whoever comes second is likely to face Brazil. Then if you come third, you're going to face someone from another side of the draw. So you could be playing, if Colombia top the group down there, you could be playing Colombia. You could be playing England. You could be playing Ghana if England don't beat Panama. So that group's a weird one where, arguably, if you judge Morocco and Brazil like FIFA World Rankings do, and they're 6th and 7th in the world, I think it is, or judging them by the eye test, watching the two of them play against each other, like, you might arguably be better off being Sweden and coming third in that group and fancy your chances against Colombia or, you know, someone of the ilk down the line rather than going up against two behemoths at a competition.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what I feel about any of that and like what actually is the answer to what some teams should be going for. Like, even watching the Scotland game last night, I was confused as to whether or not Scotland should actually park the bus at 2-0 down and settle for that, as opposed to maybe going for the draw and suffering further concessions. And they ended up conceding one more, bringing it to minus three in terms of their goal difference. But the bottom line is you've got no idea. Like they're in a really disadvantageous position playing on the first night of the final round. Whereas as the evenings go by, obviously there'll be more information available. But even just in a Scotland sort of frame of mind tonight, like they'll be hoping for Australia to give Paraguay a bit of a beating tonight, obviously. They just want the third place team to suffer and suffer badly.
Well, that one can flip either way for them.
It can, but Paraguay,
Paraguay have a worse goal difference. Scotland last night, like once you went two goals down, it was park the bus time. Don't concede anymore. Like I'd seen it last night. If they lost by one goal, they had an 84% chance. Two goals, 63% chance. Three goals, 42% chance. Four goals, they're basically done.
So this is from the BBC.
This is from the BBC.
I'd love to know what their algorithm is that's informing this, because I believe those figures, but maybe that's what they think. I trust those figures, but I definitely don't have the brain power or the time to input all these things.
It's basically like a table of the top eight teams. So Scotland started, or the eight third place teams. So Scotland started yesterday as the second third place team. And because of conceding those goals, through nothing else, no one else picking up points, they've dropped down to be the sixth third place team. So they're three off being knocked out completely.
But that obviously involves a lot of predictive analysis that BBC...
Like no one could have predicted...
They dropped down a few more percentage points after Steve Clark did his interview.
Oh, good point you make there, Steve. Yes, we do agree that you're getting knocked out. You are going to look back at yesterday's games now, Eve.
Yes, so just from last night's action, as we said, Brazil and Morocco are both officially through to the World Cup knockout stages after victories over Haiti and Scotland last night. Morocco guaranteed themselves a second place finish in their group by beating Haiti 4-2, while Brazil broke Scottish hearts with a 3-0 win. Scotland now need other results to go their way to qualify as one of the best third place finishers, as we've said, but manager Steve Clark isn't optimistic.
Steve, can I ask for your opinions on the match itself, your thoughts on it, and your assessment of where it leaves us now in terms of our chances of staying in the competition?
Disappointing performance. Poor result. You give a team like Brazil the chances that we give them the game, you expect to get punished, and that's what happened. Chances at the moment, I think we're probably going home.
Okay, so it's two separate interviews where he said, I think we're going home at this point, because there is another piece of audio out there as well where he kind of reaffirms that. It's a long old wait. Like, what do you do if you're the players? What do you do if you're the fans? You hang around, obviously. You milk this if you're a fan. If you're a player, that state of mind is a tricky one.
Do you keep training? How do you keep momentum up? Because, like, obviously results could go their way in some kind of miracle, and then by Sunday they'll know who they're facing, perhaps in a knockout stage. But have you spent the past 3 days with your manager telling you that?
Yeah. Is he just trying the biggest reverse jinx ever here? Like, is he like packing his bags? Is he showing up to the airport? Is he like sitting back home in Scotland watching these games, and then the players are there managerless when they actually play their last 32 game at the end of this week? I don't know. We'll have more on this on the football show after 9 o'clock. Meanwhile, we've got more from Cabo Verde and Pico Lopez.
We do. So Cape Verde, or Cabo Verde, can qualify for the knockout stage of the World Cup tomorrow on their debut, should they win against Saudi Arabia. So they currently sit on 2 points after draws against Spain and Uruguay. And Shamrock Rovers captain Pico Lopez has been speaking about the country's expectations for the tournament.
I wouldn't say expected, but it's a position that we wanted to be in. We knew it would be difficult, but we knew we could achieve it if we believed it. We knew the first two games would be very difficult. To pick up 2 points out of them was huge, and it probably gives us that little bit of a lift going into the final game. As far as giving the format the competition beforehand, maybe one win would probably see you through, like, and to be within 1 point of accumulating three and knowing a win will automatically qualify is amazing. So yeah, just to have that focus now and really hone in on this is a really big game for us now.
Here at home, Eve, some big managerial news in the League of Ireland.
Yeah, so Shelburne will be looking for a new permanent manager after parting ways with head coach Joey O'Brien today. His sacking comes after Shelburne's 3-0 loss to Bohemians on Monday evening. O'Brien, of course, replaced Damien Duff after he left Tolka Park last summer, but they currently sit fifth in the table. Under-20s boss Lorcan Fitzgerald has been appointed interim head coach until the process to appoint a permanent manager is concluded.
It feels quite similar to last season, Ben. It almost feels like the same time of the year when the European fixtures are going to come into view and Shelburne have a departing manager. No real surprise in terms of form, though, is this?
like when I saw the news, I wasn't shocked, but you know, I was having a chat with Steve earlier, saying maybe slightly surprised. I didn't think it would happen now. I'm like, it worked last season. They had a good run in Europe with Joey, and obviously Damien Duff left under very different circumstances. They got beat quite badly on Monday night against Bohemians. A lot of people probably didn't watch it because it was clashing with the World Cup. But I was just looking through the form before that. Like, it's their first defeat since the 24th of April. Now, I know they haven't been good, and they really haven't been good. And I've been to a few of the games, working on a couple of games to talk in the meantime. And, like, every time you go and watch them, it's a completely different setup. Not just the base formation, but, like, their style of play kind of is completely different. And the other night, they started no one up front. And Harry Wood, who is by far and away the best player, I know there's a couple of clubs in England interested in him at the moment, he was kind of playing in that floating role. But, like, before that game against Bohemians, like, they were unbeaten in 8 games. So, to say, like, coming up with European fixture in the corner, and you know now, like, they're not challenging for a league title. They're, like, it's gone beyond that. So Europe is where you shift your attention to. And you're going to have a manager come in the door, look, unless it gives the gig to Rocco Fitzgerald, which I can't really see. I know there's a couple of names in the running from outside the club. Like, they're coming into a brand new setting right before the biggest games of your year. Joey O'Brien was number 2 last season. Like, as someone put it to me, it was bad cop and worse cop, and then they just internally hired worse cop to be the main cop. And now you're just getting someone completely external to come in for it. I'd be really worried if I was a Shelburne fan. Like, I know they were giving out about some of the form recently and style of play and some of the results not end up being wins. But now you're going completely into the dark to your biggest fixture of the season. You're looking at your best player by a long stretch over the last couple of weeks could be out the door. I'm a little bit surprised. I often think of the time that Stephen Bradley had at the start with Shamrock Rovers, and a lot of people calling for his head, and people calling for him to be out the door around 2018, 2019, and Shamrock Rovers stuck by him. And I think you are going to have spells like that when you're the manager of a club where it's going bad, and you need to maybe have the support of people above you to say, look, let's not be reactionary, let's not be hasty. They've had a bad couple of months, but he's shown them before it can be good. I'm surprised they pulled the trigger. Like, I'm shocked they pulled it this early, to be honest.
Right. Like, what is the expectation for Shells in any given season? Like, it's to qualify for Europe, isn't it?
Yeah, it's qualify for Europe. And
they're,
Shelburne
and they're
fans,
mathematically well possible.
Yeah, and Shelburne fans probably have expectations higher, but you have to be realistic. You're going up against, like, they had a brilliant run to make the Conference League group stages last year. Shamrock Rovers are this behemoth of a club that are just like, success is now bred in them, and you can see that with Pico Lopez going over to the World Cup and he looks unfazed. And he has said, like, the performance he's had in Europe with Shamrock Rovers have given him that confidence for it. To qualify for Europe this season for Shelburne would be a brilliant achievement. And I don't think it's beyond the realms to say that Joey O'Brien would have got them there. I don't think it's at all. It's such a mad, topsy-turvy season where after 2 game weeks, the league table has shifted around completely. You could have given them that another 2 months and all of a sudden Shelburne could be in the third round. The very favourable Conference League draw, by the way. They're going to be facing either Nam Kalju of Estonia or Linfield again.
Yeah.
So it's like, you could very easily say Shelburne in 2 months' time could have been in third round of the Conference League and very well competing for European spot in the league.
8 points off second and 8 points off third last. So it's a proper... Is your glass half full or glass half empty when it comes to Shell so far this season when they're snuggled in mid-table? We'll have more on this, of course, over the next couple of weeks. You are on duty tomorrow night, Ben. League of Ireland, what's our fixture?
Bohemians for St. Patrick's Athletic on commentary with Keith Tracy from 8 p.m. tomorrow evening.
Nice one. That one is live here and off the ball tomorrow night. A few other stories to round up today, Eve. We have fixtures in Europe for Athlone Town.
We do. So fixture details have been confirmed for Athlone Town's Champions League qualifying campaign. So the women's Premier Division champions will travel to Snosowitz in Poland to face North Macedonian side ZFK Skopje on Wednesday, July 22nd. Should they win the semi-final, they will progress to a final against either Georgian side WFC Nike or Polish team KKS Czarny Snosowitz in the same venue on Saturday, July 25th. And then victory in this mini-tournament for Liliag side would mean progression to the second qualifying round and a fixture against Cypriot champions Apollon LFC.
Now then, in the Premier League, Arsenal have made a signing.
Yeah, they have. So Arsenal have signed defender Piero Incapié from Bayer Leverkusen on a permanent deal. The 24-year-old, of course, joined on loan from the German club last summer and played a key role in their Premier League winning campaign. It's understood that Arsenal have spent around £35 million to sign the defender on a five-year contract.
The big story in hurling, which we'll come to with Richie Hogan after 8 o'clock, is the tackle on David Reedy, which essentially sent him to hospital last weekend. We've got some news on this today.
We do. So Off the Ball GAA reporter Rachel Sheehan was chatting to Claire hurler Sean Rinn today, who has provided a positive update on David Reedy's condition. As you said, Reedy was hospitalised after sustaining a head injury during Clare's All-Ireland quarterfinal win against Dublin last weekend in Thurles. Sean Rinn gives his two cents on high tackles in hurling and when Reedy may be back in action.
I see what happened. David, like, it is very dangerous, some of them hit high tackles. I know they're obviously not, people aren't going out to try and injure people, but it's just the way it's happening. The players are moving at such speed nowadays that it is dangerous. But yeah, thankfully David's okay now and he's recovered fairly quickly. So
the news on him is good, so?
Yeah, the news is good. He's recovered. He's still in good form. So yeah, he's back out of hospital.
Would we see him coming back to training anytime soon?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't really know what his timeline is, but I say he'll be working with the physios and the doctors. So please God, he's a big player for us, big leader, so he'd be a big help.
Okay. Finally then, Eve, we have some golf news.
Yes, it's the first day of the 2026 KPMG Women's PGA Championship. Lauren Walsh ended her day at one over par, tied in 30th place. Leona Maguire, it was due to tee off at 20 past 7 this evening, and Stephanie Meadow at 20 to 8. And then Shane Lowry is the only Irish golfer in the field at this year's Travellers Championship. He ended his day on 2 under par and is tied in 16th place. Lowry, of course, gone back to working with former caddy Dermot Byrne. He's described the switch as a short-term arrangement following his split with Darren Reynolds after last week's US Open, in which he failed to make the cut.
Eve Conway, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Ben, thank you. Dion will be back with us after 9 o'clock on Thursday night's football show. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. We'll be talking to Jerry Kerr, former Leinster prop at this stage, soon to be Connacht prop, after the break. He's going to join us in studio. And before that, it is time for the Cash Machine.
The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.